Welcome to the High Premises Files podcast with me, your presenter, Charlotte Howden. I'm an HG campaigner and the co-producer and presenter of the world's first documentary about hyperemesis. Sick, The Battle Against HG is available now on Prime Video in the UK and the US, with other countries following soon. The High Premises Files podcast acts as a voice for all women who are currently suffering with or who have survived hyperemesis gravidarum. On today's episode of the High Premises Files podcast, I'm going to be talking to Michelle. Michelle is 34, she lives in Limerick in Ireland, and she's a mum of five with her youngest born just recently in July 2020. She works as a birth and a postpartum doula, and she's the founder of fatandpregnant.com. Her mission is to create a positive space where you can access information and support for your plus size pregnancy and early parenting. Michelle was 16 years old when she first fell pregnant with her first child. Now, she remembers at that time that she did definitely suffer from morning sickness and she had a lot of nausea. And this would happen, obviously, throughout the day, not just in the morning. And it never truly went away during her pregnancy. Looking back on that time now, she would say that she definitely didn't have hyperemesis, but this could have been the sign of things to come. So, Michelle, your first pregnancy, when you were just 16, is it fair to say that that pregnancy with that pregnancy sickness that you described to me was quite usual, albeit it did actually continue into your second trimester, which is actually quite unusual. So just tell me a bit more about that pregnancy.
Sure. Yeah. So I got pregnant at 16, obviously unplanned, and there was a lot of stress surrounding that pregnancy. And it wasn't so much the stress of the pregnancy, because my pregnancy really was rather uneventful. I would say, you know, I tell people, like, I have boring pregnancies, you know, everything usually is going pretty well.
Yeah.
Aside from being sick, you know, everything else, I never have any problems, any issues. It's just the sickness that gets me. So, and at 16, it wasn't the pregnancy that was stressing me out. It was the relationship. The relationship had ended and there was no involvement from my son's biological father. So I was basically going through the stress of a teenage pregnancy on my own. Thankfully, I had so much support from my family. So they were extremely understanding on the emotional side. But like my mother, she had five children and she was sick up until like first trimester. It pretty much ended for her.
Okay.
I want to say maybe her last pregnancy, it went a bit into the second trimester and she just said, yeah, I was miserable, but I got on with it. So, you know, and when she saw, and I had already been diagnosed, I had some cysts on my ovaries. So I had already been diagnosed with polycystic ovaries. And so like the pregnancy was a surprise for that reason as well.
Because,
So not that I was practicing safe sex or anything either, but you know, I got pregnant amidst many, many women on my mother's side who had trouble conceiving, who had polycystic ovaries. So I did conceive. It was stressful, but I wasn't having regular periods. So that first trimester, I know many people with hyperemesis will say, like, you know, one of the first symptoms I had was getting sick. But for me, this first pregnancy anyway, I want to say I was probably 8 or 9 weeks. And then I was putting on weight and I was able to eat. I was wanting to eat more. So some cravings, those were the first signs of my pregnancy.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, took the pregnancy test, found out I was pregnant, had the difficult conversation with my parents. And then it was like, boom, the nausea, nausea hit. And it continued throughout most of the pregnancy. It did start late first trimester. And then it continued throughout the second trimester, and then I did have a small break, and then it returned in the third trimester. So, right. And it was very random.
That does sound random, actually. And, you know, I don't like to compare pregnancy sicknesses or hyperemesis because everything is on a spectrum, isn't it? But it kind of sounds to me like whilst that was probably a little bit unusual for, you know, usual pregnancy sickness, your mind was elsewhere. You were, you know, you were young, you were worried about people finding out you were pregnant. And so you kind of were probably concentrating on other things happening in your life as opposed to the constant nausea and it coming back in the third trimester.
Yeah, I was very much like, I need to get through the pregnancy. Mm. I need to prepare. I need to just push, like, whatever uncomfortable things are happening, I need to push through and be the strongest I can be for my baby. Yeah. That's all I was focused on. So, but like everything else was fine. Like everything else with the pregnancy was fine. He was happy and healthy when he was born, and I didn't lose a tremendous amount of weight because I was still able to eat. It was just these random days and times where I would go somewhere, eat, and I would vomit after.
Yes.
And I just, you know, I was like, this is normal. That's all I thought was, this is normal. I'm sick. It's no big thing. But I was so focused on just getting through it.
Unlike her first pregnancy, where she was living in the US, this time Michelle was living in Ireland.
So I had my son just before I turned 17, and then 8 years. So I met my husband 5 years later, and we got married, and I moved to Ireland.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So my son and I moved to Ireland, and we were living here, and I still had the polycystic ovaries, but now, when I was 16, I didn't have a lot of symptoms other than irregular periods. I had no other symptoms. However, and they put me on birth control. So I was on birth control for, goodness, I was on birth control for those 4 or 5 years. Mm. And I think that did mask some of the symptoms of the polycystic ovaries. But as I got older, I started to notice, like, now, you know, I started to get hair, more hair in different places because of the extra testosterone. Mm. And my cycles were very irregular once I came off birth control, which I did before we even got married, because I knew I had the polycystic ovaries and all the family history. So it did take 2 years of, I suppose, actively trying to conceive. And then when I finally stopped, because that's usually that's when it happens, when I just said, you know what, I'm getting so stressed out about this. You know, I started really feeling down about my body as well. And I was like, let's just look at this from a totally different way. And and it was like, you know, after a night when we were out at the pub together and we came home, it was like that. It was that evening when I conceived. Funny. So it was, and I specifically remember, like, I went to a friend's house, I came home, and I was like, I could not stop vomiting. I was vomiting over the course of like 24 hours multiple times, and I told my husband, because we weren't trying, I said, oh, I have the flu, this is bad, I hope it's only a 24-hour bug. And then I started to feel better enough to go to the gym, you know, that kind of thing. And then it came back. And I was like, wait a second. I was like, this is not how the flu works. It doesn't just come and go like this. So I did take a pregnancy test, and we were both really happy about it, not knowing that like all hell was going to break, was going to break loose.
Yeah.
And essentially that's when the vomiting and the nausea started, and it was really acute and really severe. Like, I think I took the test on a Wednesday, and by Saturday I was concerned, because it was so constant in comparison to my first pregnancy. Yeah. And it was just vomiting all day and all night. And it didn't matter what I ate, if I was lying down, if I was sitting, you know, like everybody talks about prioritizing rest. So I was like resting. I was doing everything you're told to do.
Yeah.
but nothing was helping.
It wasn't working. And at this time as well, you know, talking about rest and being bedbound and basically, you know, having to just stay at home, you had just started a new business, hadn't you? As a baker. So, I mean, I can't really think of a worse job to be doing. You have hyperemesis. I mean, any, you know, anything to do with food or having to stand up for long periods. I mean, what happened with that, with your new business?
So I conceived in April, and I want to say by June, I was like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. I held it together as long as I could. And I was, so we had just started our business and our, basically, I mean, it was cupcakes and all kinds of other little treats, mostly cupcakes, but we were going to farmers markets, and I was going to farmers markets, but having to be driven there. So my husband would drive me there. I would basically be sitting the entire time, which for me, my parents have a business as well, not a bakery, but they have a business as well that involved going to a farmer's market. And anybody who knows sales knows that, like, you're going to sell more if you're standing upright, interacting, you know, people are more drawn to you that way. Mm. Whereas I was basically seated in a chair, absolutely miserable, trying to sell, you know, cupcakes and food that I couldn't stand to look at. So it was so challenging. And
I mean, you know, we shouldn't laugh, should we? But I do have this image of this poor woman who you must have looked. I mean, because when you have hyperemesis, you look ashen, like you can even look quite green, you're pale, sat there. Yeah. And I, you know, like you said, you wouldn't have necessarily been very welcoming if you even couldn't look at the own, you know, the food that you were trying to sell. So we shouldn't laugh, because I'm sure at the time it must have been awful, because one, it must have been awful having to try and achieve that, try and get there, try and do the selling. But similarly, it must have been awful because, you know, this was an exciting new project for you and you just weren't able to commit to it.
Absolutely. And I was very, it wasn't even that I was concerned about things financially at the moment, because financially we were okay. We were okay financially. But at many of these farmers markets, like, you get a stall and you have to be there to keep your place and secure your place. So I was thinking toward the future, and I was like, if, you know, everybody wants to get their name out, you want people to buy from you, obviously, but if I'm not here at the market, are people going to assume I'm no longer in business?
Yeah.
And am I going to lose my place? And so there were all these things going through my mind. And of course I was trying to maintain baking. And what I ended up doing was trying to space things out. Like, okay, I'm going to bake one thing now, then I'm going to take a break. Then I'm going to try something else. Mm. Then I'm going to take a break. And, you know, I also had to have my husband kind of join me. Like, now this was a project that I was mostly doing. And now my husband is, like, trying to learn how to ice cupcakes.
Oh, blessed to have.
And the one thing was carrot cake. That is the one thing that just, I couldn't stand it anymore. And another aspect of the business was we were also in different cafes, so having to deliver these items to people, and it became impossible. So sadly, the business just, I had to completely stop. And this was so this would have been around June, July. And during this time, because it was first trimester, I was like, well, maybe this will stop. Maybe it won't be so bad.
Yeah. Because you wouldn't have heard of hyperemesis at this point. You know, your first pregnancy, you battled through it, fine. This pregnancy, okay, it's not going like the other one, but instantly, like every woman, we all know that pregnancy sickness finishes after the first trimester. And so I can imagine you thinking, like, just keep at it, because this is going to go and then the business can take off again.
Yes. That's ultimately what I was hoping for. But I also think deep down, I was like, something is not right. And the more people I spoke to about it, the more I felt that it wasn't right. And I want to say it was close to 12 weeks where I was like hoping it would ease off, and it wasn't. And I did go to my GP to get a referral for the maternity hospital, because Again, like I'm in Ireland. This is my first pregnancy. I didn't know a lot of people who had had babies in Ireland, and I didn't know how the system worked. So I was told you have to go to your GP first, and they have to give you the referral. And it was during that appointment, I was very adamant. I first went in and I told them how sick I was, and I hadn't been in for a very long time. So they took my weight, and I said, yeah, like I've lost some weight. And but they didn't say anything. They said nothing. And they didn't know. So I'm not at the GP very often. So I had to explain, like, this is my second pregnancy. Yes, I know some sickness is to be expected, but you don't understand. Like, I was really trying to communicate how severe it was, but I felt like I wasn't being heard. I was referred to the maternity for the sickness, because I'm assuming at this point I was in tears. I'm assuming. And once I started crying, that's when people really that's when people were like, okay, wait a second, maybe this isn't quite as normal. And I got the first time I went to the maternity was when I went to the A&E. I went before I even, so I didn't even have my booking appointment. I basically rolled up. They didn't know who I was, didn't even confirm my pregnancy. And I basically just said, like, I need help. I wasn't able to keep even water down at that stage. And it was another, so the GP didn't really believe me, but sent the referral anyway. And told me to go to A&E. I got to A&E. And basically, all we did was talk. They
And
didn't check my urine. They didn't do blood work. They didn't do anything. Basically, I was sat there. They asked me how I knew I was pregnant, talked about the pregnancy tests and all the symptoms. But they didn't check for ketones. They didn't even check for like a bladder infection, kidney infection, anything like that. It was just us having a chat.
It was 2011, and despite already being a mother, Michelle tells me that the Irish doctors and midwives were insistent that this was just usual and that morning sickness and nausea was completely normal.
So what was that experience like? Were they taking you seriously or?
I felt like they were not taking me seriously. And when I said, like, I'm sick, you don't understand, I can't keep anything down, I've lost weight, I'm miserable, I can't work. I explained all these things, and their response basically was, well, you know, some sickness is expected during pregnancy. And I wanted to combust because I wanted to say, I know, I've been pregnant before. This is not my first time. I know what's normal. This is not normal. And they sent me on my way with nothing.
And was it at this point in your story that they start to talk about your weight?
When I told it was it I mentioned it at this first visit to the A&E. I mentioned it, like, I've lost weight, but they didn't even care how much. They didn't There was no further dialogue. Most of the dialogue was, yes, I'm so sorry, but this is to be expected. Have you tried ginger? Have you tried sipping water? Have you tried eating before you get out of bed? And at that point, I had already gone through my catalog of what to do, and none of it was helping. And they basically sent me on my way and told me to come back if it got even worse. And if this gets worse, I can barely function now. And my husband was very concerned because this was his first, expecting his first child. And he was like, you know, kind of jaw drop, is this what pregnancy is like? And I said, no, this is normally not what pregnancy is like. I don't know why I'm so sick. I don't know what to do about it anymore. And no one's helping me. And I did leave that appointment feeling really defeated, like, okay, like no one is listening. And I felt like, pick yourself up and try to keep going. Hopefully it'll stop. And it was within that same week. Now, not only did I have the nausea and the vomiting, like the vomiting was so severe, like I was running out of clothing because every time I would vomit, I would be urinating myself.
Yeah,
And
which is so common.
which is so common, my poor pelvic floor.
Yeah.
And my husband is now like rubbing my back when I'm vomiting, trying to comfort me. Oh, and I was retching as well, you know, nothing coming up anymore because I'm not able to eat anything. And he would leave for work and I would be alone at home on my own all day with the blinds closed, you know, and, or in the sitting room or in the bedroom. And I would, you know, trying to do, like, a lot of times I would try to read, or there were no audiobooks back then, you
yes,
know, or
of
not,
course.
Not as much access.
Yeah.
So I would try to read, or I'd watch TV, or even just have the TV on and just listen to it with my eyes closed. And, you know, I probably went days and days without brushing my teeth because I refused to do anything that could potentially.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what
I
we
refused
all do.
To do anything.
Yeah. Because you don't want to be sick. It's the worst feeling in the world to be sick. It's a traumatic thing to be sick, and to be sick that many times just adds, you know, it's just a horrible thing to do, and so many women do that. And that's why it's so difficult when people are saying, like, you just have to try and eat something, but your mind's saying, but I don't want to be sick again. And you just get in this horrible cycle, don't you, where you know that you should be trying to eat some things, but you just don't want to because you don't want to go through being sick and have your head down that toilet again.
Exactly. And that's what it was. It was basically a tug of war between me and food and trying to get something into my body. And I didn't notice, because I was a plus size person at the time and still am today, I didn't notice the weight loss as much as other people did. And I spent weeks in our home, so nobody was even seeing me to comment anyway. It was my husband who grew more concerned. But within that first... within that first trimester, I want to say I lost at least, I lost more than 10% of my body weight. So I lost 30 pounds, maybe even a little bit more.
Yeah.
And
that, do you know, Michelle, that's shocking to me. And I hope other women haven't experienced this, because I can be hopeful, but I doubt that will be the case. And I just feel like, and I don't know if you do, but from listening to you, as a plus size woman, going and seeing your doctors, they weren't taking your weight loss very seriously. And, you know, at the end of the day, really doesn't matter how, what size you are, if you're losing rapid amounts of weight quickly, you know, it's okay to lose 30 pounds of weight, isn't it, over like 2 years or something like that, but not in the space of weeks. That's a massive red flag. And I'm so shocked by it. And I wonder if you think that is because you are a plus size woman, it's almost like it doesn't matter.
I do. It was my weight loss was either not acknowledged, or it was dismissed as it was. So that first visit to A&E I went to, the second visit was about a week later. And now I had it like extreme pain, like abdominal pain, like kidney pain. And lo and behold, I had a kidney infection when I went, you know, that had been fed. I do believe I had it the first time.
Yeah.
I think I had it the first time I went in. They just didn't test. And I went back the second time, had lost even more weight. I did have the kidney infection. They gave me the antibiotics and some anti-sickness medication. And it was then where I stressed again. Like, I am trying to suck on ice chips at this point, and they're not staying down. I've lost weight. They didn't weigh me again. That's why I have to guess approximately how much weight I lost, because I don't actually know. I wasn't weighed. And I probably had a scale in the house, but I just, like, it wasn't a concern of mine. I was like, I just need to survive.
No.
I need to survive. But it was then, it was, you know, there were comments like, well, your body can handle it. You're a bigger lady. You know, I heard your body can handle it, or you could do with losing a few pounds anyway. And it was just like, oh, the weight stigma within those comments just baffles me. Because as you say, no matter what weight you're starting out at, if you are losing so much weight in such a short period of time, especially during pregnancy, like, what is going on? We need to investigate. There was nothing like that. It just was completely not... it wasn't on their radar whatsoever of, we should look into this. It was like, here's your antibiotics, here's some tablets, away you go. See you at your booking appointment.
Put simply, they just didn't want to listen. And of course, although this was 2011, high premises wasn't really well known. And Michelle's midwives and doctors certainly didn't know about it.
Do you think if you had been, you know, 50, 60 kilos and you'd gone in and said, I think I've lost, you know, 10, 15 pounds, let's say, you would have been taken more seriously?
I do.
Yeah.
I think if I would have had bones protruding from my body and eyes sunken in my head, like maybe, but I just, like, I was still over 200 pounds and I'm 5'8". So I was still over 200 pounds. So like, I think it was kind of like, well, your body can take it, or this is actually a good thing. It was like silver lining. You might be sick, but you've lost weight. And it was just, oh, it makes me sick even to think about it now, because there is so much misery behind the weight loss.
Absolutely. So, and also, there isn't a doctor in the world who should proactively tell a woman that it's good that she's losing weight fast. Especially, like you said, when you're pregnant. No, that's for the fad diet culture and the Instagram influencers who tell you to drink certain soups and teas, right? That's not for a professionally trained person. It doesn't matter how much you weigh. If you're not taking in food for a prolonged period of time, and okay, yes, you're losing weight, that's not good for you.
Yeah.
At all. Yeah. And
there was no advice. There was no advice. The thing that shocked me the most was there was a complete lack of empathy.
Yeah.
There was nothing. I went in there looking for one sympathetic person, one compassionate person who could eat. Like, I never even heard, I'm sorry this is happening to you.
No.
It was very much, this is normal. You can handle it. Here's your antibiotics. You have a kidney infection. Here's your tablets. Come back to us if it's worse. Otherwise, you know, your booking appointment is next week or whatever the case was. Yeah. And it was the first time in my life if I entered a medical facility and felt like I wasn't treated like a person.
Yeah.
I was completely treated like a number, just we'll get you in, get you out, that kind of thing. And hyperemesis took some of the joy out of my pregnancy,
The
treatment I received also took, you know, that little bit more as well.
Yeah. It's another blow. It's just another blow on top of many different blows coming from you from all different angles when you have hyperemesis that you just didn't need.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
After this, Michelle went on to have two more children, both boys. And she experienced no hyperemesis with both of those pregnancies.
So after your lovely daughter was born, you then went on to have two more pregnancies, both boy pregnancies, and those were hyperemesis free. Is that right?
Yes. So during my pregnancy with my daughter, we moved to Wisconsin in the United States. So I actually finished her pregnancy in America, and then I conceived for the third time when I was there. And let me tell you, I was nail-bitingly nervous.
That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, it must have been like, you know, a ticking time bomb. Every day you got up, you must be thinking, okay, there's no nausea yet. Is it going to come later today or am I going to wake up? You must have been on edge is all I can say.
I was.
Yeah.
I was on edge and I was working full time. I was working, it's called a child advocacy center. So children, you know, who sadly experience some type of abuse are interviewed there by social workers and the police. So that's where I was working. I was working in a very, you know, sensitive place where many people come when they've experienced a trauma. And there I was going to work just on edge. And when the nausea started, I was bracing myself for it to keep getting worse.
It
started very mild and I remember crying to my husband and crying to the poor women I worked with, and I was like, you don't understand, I'm so happy to be pregnant, but I was so miserable last time. And it stopped. It stopped at about 12 or 13 weeks, and it slowly started to fade away, the days of nausea, and it wasn't constant. So when I had it, it wasn't very severe. I vomited sometimes, but it was very typical, you know, kind of the morning sickness that you hear of. It was worse in the morning, maybe went into the afternoon, but then it stopped. And I was certainly able to deal with it. It was more of the anticipation of what it could be that I suppose was challenging for me, but it stopped. And like the rest of my pregnancy was fine. And we waited to find out what we were having. And when I gave birth to a boy, I was like, ha, maybe this is why.
Why?
Maybe this is why it wasn't so bad. And well, that's kind of what I attributed it
to. Yeah, absolutely. And your next pregnancy after your son was born, you went on to get pregnant again. And that was also a boy, wasn't it? And you also didn't have hyperemesis with that pregnancy.
It was very similar. It was very similar to my third pregnancy. It was a bit more severe in the first trimester. There was a lot more vomiting, but it did end around that 13 to 14 weeks. Yeah. And again, the relief was amazing. And it was during his pregnancy, I did have, so during my daughter's and my fourth, I did have a little bit of acupuncture to kind of help, which I found beneficial. I know some people don't, but I found it beneficial those two times. But yeah, my fourth pregnancy, it stopped. I went on, I had a beautiful home birth and again, didn't know what I was having. I had a boy. And again, I was like, this is why.
Why?
So this is, I don't need a gender scan. I know what I'm having based on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's so funny. And I mean, statistically, hyperemesis pregnancies, there are more girls born to hyperemesis pregnancies. So statistically, yes. If you have a girl, perhaps you are, I don't know if it's quite right to say more likely, but there are more girl hyperemesis pregnancies. But obviously, like I said to you when we spoke, I only have one child and that was a boy and I had severe hyperemesis. So you just don't know, do you? But for you, definitely having or carrying a girl was obviously worse for you and the hyperemesis was severe, but not with your sons.
In 2020, Michelle was pregnant again. And this time the hyperemesis came back with a vengeance. She experienced nausea and vomiting from 5 weeks pregnant, and she found it really hard to function this time. Whilst the vomiting actually stopped sooner than her second pregnancy and only lasted until 14 weeks, the nausea was relentless and she experienced it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, until the day she gave birth.
Your last pregnancy, well, I don't know if it will be your last pregnancy, I'm presuming, but your first pregnancy fell pregnant again. And I was going to say, let's say your baby was born in July 2020. So last year during a pandemic, of course. When you found out you were pregnant again, what happened in those early days? And did that tell you quite clearly that perhaps you knew what gender you were having this time?
Well, this time this baby was very planned for insurance reasons and trying to have a home birth and all of that. I was using an app for ovulation, so I was fairly certain of when I ovulated, and I was visiting America at the time. So my husband and I were trying to conceive. I left and then I was in Wisconsin in my mother's home, and I just had this feel. I had no symptoms, but I just said, I'm like, I bet you, just, you know, just intuitively knew. So I got the pregnancy test. So yes, I took the test and then it was pretty much waiting. And this was planned as our last pregnancy. And I always told my husband, like we were actively trying, but I never told him when I was ovulating. Never, ever told him. I was like, I want to, because you see these kind of women telling their partners that they're pregnant in a surprising way. And I've always wanted to do that.
No.
But the sickness always prevented me, because like you see me throwing up and like, you're pregnant. So. There was no element of surprise. So because I was overseas, and I was there for 2 more weeks. Like I found out the day after I arrived. So I had 2 weeks of waiting. And the first thing that popped into my mind was, how am I going to hide this pregnancy from everybody until I get back to Ireland? And many people probably would have had a very easy time doing that. But the sickness started, I want to say, 2 days later.
Wow. Okay.
So I was in my mother's home. It was just my mom. So it was me, my two of my children, and my mom. And I had all these visits because it's pre-COVID. So I had all these visits planned with friends and family. And I was absolutely miserable. I was so nauseated. I was not vomiting yet, but the mm-hmm. nausea was written on my face. Like I'm actually surprised nobody picked up.
Yeah.
I'm very surprised because the nausea was very, very severe. And there were times I actually wished I would vomit. I was like, if vomiting would give me some relief, then I hope yes. it happens, but it yeah. never did.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, trying to work through all of that. And I did get through the 2 weeks after seeing friends and family, but I wasn't 100% sure. Like at that time, I didn't really have a guess because I didn't have hyperemesis with my boys, but I always had sickness in the sure. first trimester yeah. anyway.
So you needed to know how severe it was going to be before perhaps yeah. knowing if it was a girl or not.
It was like, ask me again at 12 weeks. So, but I will say it got very intense very quickly, which made me have a suspicion I was having a girl.
Yeah. And did the vomiting come then, or was it just nausea for that pregnancy?
The vomiting did come after I got home. So okay. the flight back to Ireland, which is about a total of 7 hours, was yeah. horrendous. That's... I had a bag ready to catch vomit. And I had a 2-year-old on my lap. My son was 2. So I was like, it was like being seasick
yeah.
forever. But I did make it home. I told my husband the next day because I was like, I am not hiding this pregnancy from anybody for one more minute. So I told him, told him straight away and told him like maybe he suspected, but again, like as soon as the flight landed, I was hiding it from him. I yeah. still wanted, like I was so determined to have this yeah. surprise.
Well, hyperemesis takes so much away from you, doesn't it? Like, you know, women don't want to have to tell people until they've got to the 12-week scan, just to be sure. And it just takes so many things away from you because it is just so obvious that you're ill. So I understand why you were still trying to, you know, surprise him and have that moment with him.
Yes. And I did. I got the moment and he was very surprised and it was very lovely. And basically from that moment forward, I allowed myself to show how awful I really felt. And my husband was fantastic, amazing. And I want to say the vomiting started within days and it was very characteristic of my daughters. So I straight away was like, I was only 7 weeks, but because of how severe and how constant it was, it wasn't yes. coming in waves
yeah.
like my son. So I was like, this feels familiar. So, and
estrogen inside me.
Yes. Yes. And it was, I will say, like, I was so prepared for it. This time sure. though, I was like,
yeah.
I started booking the acupuncture straight away. I started homeopathy. Like I would be a much more alternative person anyway. And the tablets that I was given with my daughter did not really help the hyperemesis. So this time I said, I'm going to throw everything natural that I possibly can at it. And if I can get through with that, I'm okay with that. And
yeah,
to be honest, if I needed to get any medication, I absolutely would have. But the truth is like, I didn't feel like I really needed it. And I know I'm lucky in that respect. And I was self-employed. So I'm a birth and postpartum doula. And one of the wonderful things about being self-employed is I didn't have to work if I didn't want to, or I could take however many clients I wanted to. And I have really good relationships with other doulas. So they could be my backup where if I was feeling awful, I could just give them a ring and they would go support someone. if needed. So I had all these really wonderful things in place. It was still awful, and I was vomiting up until about 16 weeks. But the what was very different about my daughter's pregnancy, so with my first daughter, my nausea stopped around 20 weeks. The hyperemesis stopped around 20 weeks, which I was very thankful for. This time, the vomiting stopped at 16 weeks, but the nausea continued.
And that's something that a lot of women experience, where they might not actually have the same sickness that you had in the first part of your pregnancy, but the nausea is unrelenting and lasts the whole time. And I think, you hit the nail on the head when you say sometimes you just wish you could be sick, because then it would give you some relief, even just for like half an hour. And so I wondered, with your nausea, was it like that for the whole pregnancy? Did you just think, oh,
Oh,
it's not going?
it never left. I used to, people would check in with me, which was wonderful because now I had made more connections in Ireland as well, and I knew all these wonderful doulas and everybody, so they knew to check in. And they would check in, and I basically had this scale of like, how nauseated am I on a scale of 1 to 10? And it never went below a 2. But whenever it was a 2, I was still feeling awful. Like, I was still struggling to get into the shower, struggling to brush my teeth, that my energy levels were really low. And hyperemesis just, and then the pandemic happened, so I was like, okay, I'm nauseated, I can't go anywhere. It was just, and it was my last pregnancy, so there were all these things that I just felt like I could not do or didn't have the energy to do. And it was very full on, and there were times I would be in bed most of the day, and thankfully my husband was able to be at home. That's the one silver lining to the pandemic, was that my husband could work from home. So he was, versus before where he had to leave, he was able to be here now. And my son was 16, is now 16, so he was home from school. So I had these two people who could help with all the little ones. And that's the silver lining to the entire experience, was that the pandemic actually made us closer, and we had to be together. And but I mean, there the entire pregnancy, I would be saying things like, I just want 10 minutes where I'm not nauseated. I don't know what it feels like anymore to not be
Not
nauseated.
be,
Like, this is my normal, and it's awful. So yeah, it wasn't, and to be honest, I didn't know that vomitless hyperemesis was even a thing.
No, it's not as well known. I think a lot of women think if they don't have the sickness, then it's not that bad. It's not as bad as someone who's being sick 30 times a day. But again, you can never compare someone's suffering. And actually, I've had both, and the nausea, I don't really want to go out on a limb and say this exactly for sure 100%, but it was definitely worse for me, the nausea, because you never got any relief. So,
That was
again,
exactly my experience. There was no relief, and certain things would, like, I continued the acupuncture, and I felt like that did help. It opened up windows where maybe the nausea wasn't as intense, but it never fully went away. And knowing what I know about hormones, I was preparing myself for the third trimester, because as your hormones increase right before birth, I was 100% ready for a surge in nausea, and that's exactly what happened. Like, the last week before I did end up having a daughter, I had Iris born at home, so my predictions were correct.
They're correct, and that goes with
We're
that's good,
correct.
because otherwise that ruins the podcast, because that's what we're like trying to say. I'm glad that she's a girl. Yeah, because she was born in July 2020, wasn't she? So she's over 6 months now. And so what I wanted to finally talk to you about is fat and pregnant, and want to find out, when did you start that? Did you start that before your pregnancy with your daughter or after? And is fat and pregnant something that you have started as a result of the experiences that you have had with your five pregnancies and being a plus size woman?
Absolutely. It was during my, it was when I was postpartum after my fourth pregnancy. I had already been a doula for 2 years, and I was just, online as you are, and I was looking at different resources for people, and I came across, other people who identify as plus size and how they were treated in similar ways as I was, being congratulated or, fobbed off for having lost so much weight during pregnancy, being encouraged. So people without hyperemesis being encouraged to do disordered eating. Don't eat any carbs, don't eat, being instructed basically, to diet throughout their pregnancy. And I fell into this rabbit hole of looking at weight stigma, sometimes called, fat phobia, and how people with a higher BMI are treated differently. And that's when I started Fat and Pregnant. So I was not pregnant, but I started Fat and Pregnant. And I just to bring awareness, I suppose, to some of these issues, and also an element of support and providing information for people who are plus size, because there's so many things that people don't realize if you're not someone living in a bigger body. Like, for example, the amount of maternity clothes that you can find as a bigger person is so limited, it's ridiculous. But if you're, a size 10 and that's not your reality, you're not looking for those clothes, and you're not realizing that there's this huge void of lack of options. And, as I say, women going in and being told, congratulated for not gaining any weight their entire pregnancy, or being congratulated for losing weight. So yeah, Fat and Pregnant was created because there is a lack of information and resources for people. And the only way you really see plus size or fat people in pregnancy, like bumps, for example. So seeing a plus size person with a beautiful bump, that's not going to come across your Instagram feed unless you're actively looking for it. And I think that's a problem. I think people of all shapes, sizes, races, cultural backgrounds, and abilities should be depicted in magazines, books, television. I have a st like I'm looking out my window now, and I have a stack of magazines, all pregnancy and maternity related, and I collected 10 of them. There is only one image of a plus size person, and it's not even an actual person, it's an illustration.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, do you know what? Now you're saying that, I'm totally agreeing with you. And I think actually, whilst on social media and perhaps in mainstream media and print, things are starting to change, but not when it comes to pregnancy. Pregnant women are still very much held in one view. And, even without being a plus size woman, when you have hyperemesis, your pregnancy is so different to what is the societal standard and norm that you are completely left out. So I completely agree with you. And
They're
actually,
related.
yes,
They're
they
related.
are.
There's a
Absolutely.
total lack of representation for both.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And that's really my goal, is to provide a space. So Fat and Pregnant, there's fatandpregnant.com where people can look. And I'm going to do a very simple plug here. I'm writing a book called Fat Birth, and it's all about positive birth experiences that plus size people have had, because so often the information is very risk-based and fear-based of this could happen to you and this could happen to you because your BMI is over 40, you're not going to be able to birth vaginally. And so much of it is either untrue or it's so biased. So that's why I'm writing the book. And if there's anybody listening who is plus size and had hyperemesis throughout their pregnancy who wants to share their birth stories, I'm creating a window of representation where if you want to share your story of hyperemesis and birth, please, get in touch with me, because I would love, because many people as well who have hyperemesis are, I was very afraid of how that was going to impact my birth and my baby. And the
Absolutely.
reality is all of my babies were healthy, no matter what level of sickness I had. So if anybody wants to share a story, I would love to include it. So my hyperemesis story isn't the only one in the book.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Michelle, that's brilliant. I think it's fantastic. I think Fat and Pregnant is going to be very successful. I think there'll be lots of women listening now. I think, yes, I'm going to go and look at that and see what Michelle has to say. And I think all women, regardless of size, actually, if you don't fit into that pregnancy norm, there are so many things that we don't know about. And like you said, there were this fear mongering that happens with pregnancy when, you know, there's a difference between informed choices and information being, you know, powerful and knowledge is powerful, and then shaming people and scaring people. And I think, you know, the same can be said for hyperemesis, especially with medications. Now, I know that you didn't go down that route because they didn't actually work for you, but obviously the other side of that is doctors saying, oh, it will harm your baby, so you shouldn't take it, which isn't true, you know. And so there's all this misinformation coming from really professionally trained people. So it's kind of up to us, the ones that aren't medically trained, to you know, to put the real information out there. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. Yes,
thank you for having me. Thanks so much.
If you want to learn more about Fat and Pregnant, which was founded by Michelle, please go to fatandpregnant.com. Michelle's book, Fat Birth, is coming out soon, and she's looking for birth stories now. So head over to her website to submit those. Thank you for listening to the Hyperemesis Files. If you have been affected by anything that has been spoken about in today's podcast, please visit your local hyperemesis charity or speak to a healthcare provider. For more information about the documentary Sick, The Battle Against HG, please visit www.thesickfilm.co.uk.